As the perpetually defiant teenager Obama skips Nancy Reagan's funeral, King Kong came down from the Empire State and kicked butt in Michigan and Mississippi, etc., although he failed in Idaho. But the Donald wreaked havoc in these states where disenfranchised workers and union veterans stew bitterly on the economy, and maybe they even cherish their guns and their religion. As Cruz wins Idaho, a natural stomping ground given its conservative and religious roots, but Rubio wins what? Meanwhile, in Tiny Town, where Mayor Rubio was pulling out his hair, Marco claims Ted Cruz sent out more liar dropout cards in Hawaii again. Of course, Rubio now must consider investing in a canine if he doesn't have one already so he can go home and kick the dog. After all, everyone deserves a scapegoat, not to mix metaphors. But really, Marco need go no further than the nearest mirror to find the source of his own pain, agony, and demise. Marco, for example, his Trump assault only appears to have borne fruit for Cruiser. Others pointed out Rubio is in a downward spiral of a dying campaign with only Baghdad Bob excuses left to illuminate the way. Now, can Hillary survive Sanders? Of course, but every step will be painful, agonizing, like having a Jehovah's Witness lurking on the porch every time you go out the door. But Hillary is weak as a candidate. Here in Cruces, we have news as well as Nathan, please don't call me Tiny Small, announces his run for the State House while David Gutierrez gets charged for his prurient, and that means naughty, offers to his female co-workers. Can Tiny Smalls make it to the State House? I'd invite him on the show to ask, but he seems to need an air sickness bag. The last time I offered salutations, he looked at me and I thought he was going to barf. Meanwhile, is this David Gutierrez's last rodeo? Dunno, but at least where he might be headed, one does not need $2,000 to find cheap and easy intimacy. Stay tuned, sports fans. Kelly here. It's approximately 6:09. Good morning to you. Real lovely morning out there. It was a little chillier than, say, a day or two ago, maybe 2 days ago. And I am told here by my electronic companion that it's 42 degrees outside. So, big win for Trump yesterday, but it was proportional. And I figure that Donald will get between, say, 60, maybe 70, 75 delegates from last night. And Cruz is not going to get that many, but he'll get a nice handful. In addition to that, and I'm putting cream in my coffee now, if you don't mind me multitasking. Whenever I try to multitask, by the way, it almost always leads to disaster. So I hope I don't accidentally pour a creamer on my soundboard here. But this does bring up a painful dilemma for our friend Marco Rubio, because I went through the states where he had run, and I've got it hooked up right here. I was kind of curious how many counties did Rubio win, because Rubio is got this really amazing way. Rubio is basically a salesman, isn't he? No matter how bad something happens, he's like somebody, you know, I think he's going to make a ton of money on the, what are those called? Encouraging speeches, you know, inspirational speaker tour, you know, because no matter what happens, he's got a way of spinning it. You know, we're on the verge of our greatest, you know, the guy's house burns down and he gets an idea for charcoal briquettes. He's just got that kind of way of approaching stuff, which is kind of admirable, except that when your campaign is in free fall. In Mississippi, he got zero counties in the entire state. In Michigan, he got two counties. In Idaho, which is a fairly conservative place, which he should have done well, and he got zero counties. And I don't know how Hawaii is set up because I looked for counties in there and I really couldn't find them. But, and it looks like Trump has, Trump won 3 out of 4 states, but Trump won Hawaii. But Trump won everything. So, all right. So you got 4 states, and I didn't even bother to count how many counties were in Michigan. But out of 4 states, some of them fairly large, not 3 out of 4 fairly large in terms of geographic area, he got 2 counties. I mean, there's just how could he possibly win? Now, I want to point out, only just for the record, that Obama had a choice of going to Nancy Reagan's funeral or going to some, I don't know, was it a tech convention? He decided to go to a tech convention and make comments instead of going to Nancy Reagan's funeral, which I think is, people were not making a real big deal out of it, but I just think it's, he's so juvenile, you know, he's like, he's just so ready to give insult, you know, and a lot of the insults are kind of passive aggressive or whatever, you know. It just makes me wonder what he thinks he's going to have achieved when he leaves office. But not going to Ronald Reagan's widow's funeral is just, I mean, that's basically all you need to know about this guy. So anyway, I do have advice for Trump. I mean, I have enjoyed his campaign immensely, but if the guy wanted to really get on the, he's about halfway there. If he wants to get on the good side of people, especially women, and they're saying that women especially have taken offense at him, they were about even with him a month or two ago, and now women in the Republican Party are 20-point enthusiasm gap between women and men. He needs to stop bragging because it doesn't make any sense. Everybody, if you're a billionaire, note to self, if you're a billionaire, you don't need to brag to people about your success. It's implied, you know? All right, here's a little bit on Rubio.
Now, one last thing I want to get to with you, Ed. Marco Rubio, single digits in Mississippi, very possibly single digits in Michigan, could end up 99 delegates. He could end up with none of those tonight. What happened to Marco Rubio?
I think when he got into the fray, he had a very optimistic, he was a very smart candidate. He should have stayed on that optimism. But when he got into the fray about 3 weeks ago, he got battered pretty badly, and he's certainly not been an effective candidate. There's no place for him to go. Even if he wins his state, which I don't think he will, it's going to be a very close race, and there's no place for him to go after that. There's no support.
No support.
No support. You look at these numbers. There's no support. He's at fourth place. Now that Ben Carson's gone, he's at the bottom of the pack everywhere.
That's right. He can't even. And if Carson was there, he might be in fifth place.
And it's sad because he's a great talent, a very smart guy, but he has absolutely failed now as a candidate, and it's I think it's over for him.
Well, strong letter to follow. So, big night for Donald Trump. Interesting night for Donald Trump and the people watching him. And a surprisingly strong night for
All right, so a surprisingly strong night for Bernie Sanders. Now you've got strength in Trump. So let's just say this: if this rolls out and continues to roll out the way that it has been going, then I don't see how Trump has stopped. But it could be a squeak, or it could be close. I think I was trying to figure out how many. I believe that Trump has maybe 450 delegates at about this point, or maybe a little bit more. No, that's about right. He couldn't have more than 450, and so Cruz would be back behind him probably. I mean, Cruz is maybe at 350, so Cruz is back maybe 100. And if this rolls out, I mean, obviously, you know, if this is a marathon, which it is, and this rolls out, continually rolls out this way, then at some point, unless, you know, Cruz has a breakthrough moment, which he's already had in Texas, his breakthrough moment is behind him, really. because that's the big state that he could stick in his pocket, which he did, but it was proportional. So I think Trump brought home 50 delegates out of 150 in Texas. But anyway, it goes to the convention, and I think it's a psychologically important point to hit 400 or 450, because you need a little over 1,200 to make it. So that's, according to anybody's easy math, that's a third of the way. It's less than a third of the way. And pretty soon, he's going to be halfway there. So I think people are really going to start getting nervous. They're already nervous in the party. I've never seen, I just have never seen anything like this, reaction to this. So anyway, you know how this whole thing goes. But I think the question here, the kind of the surprising thing is, I don't see anybody stopping Hillary. I mean, there's only two people in the race, and it is, Sanders, even if he continues to get these victories, they're symbolic. He's too far behind, and he would have to win everything. Basically, he'd have to win everything coming and going in seven ways from Sunday. It's just not going to happen. But, he can make his moral points if that's what he's about. I mean, I don't see the argument for Sanders in the first place. I do see the argument in the upset, the anger, the frustration and everything. And when Bernie goes in and beats Hillary in Michigan, you know that people are upset about the economy, right? The economy has gone to hell in a handbasket in Washington. They've been pretending for 10 years that we've recovered from the recession, which we've never done. So anyway, I've got another story for you. I'm going to continue on and obviously into this political stuff to give you a little more of a, inform you a little bit more. But there is a story out there from Judge Napolitano, who says that Hillary is going to be indicted before November, before the November election. So I don't know anything about that other than the fact that he's been talking up indictment for a long time on her. And it could be just the brand he's selling. But, I mean, if I was her, I would be slightly nervous, because, they do have a bunch of stuff that she had in her, she had in her grab bag. So, all right. Here is a little bit of, if it's not too long, a little bit from Laura Ingraham on why Trump and Sanders won the big state. And let's check this out. Well, actually, let's go to break here. And Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And it's 6:20, and we'll take a little, we'll come back and find out why he won those states.
Walk along the river to love that.
All right, here's a little bit on the Reagan, Nancy Reagan funeral. Here is from a press conference and talking about whether who would go, who'd be in the delegation to go to the funeral.
Oh. Nancy Reagan's funeral. Mrs. Obama's going. Can you tell us who else is going to be in the delegation?
I don't have more information about the delegation at this point. The funeral has been scheduled for Friday, and Mrs. Obama will attend.
The president's not going to attend.
The president will not attend. The president actually is traveling in Texas.
And lastly,
the president was, you know, I don't know, he must be, have been in Texas, but he went to a convention to give a speech. Now, why does someone in the last, whatever it is, 6 months of his presidency, last three quarters of a year, he doesn't run again, he's not probably going to ever run for office again. Why does he skip the funeral of the wife of who many consider to be the greatest president of our lifetime, Ronald Reagan, when Obama himself said that he wanted to be a Reagan-like figure in changing America, which I guess if it's a photo negative, maybe that's true. But here's a little bit from her funeral.
First Lady Michelle Obama will attend Nancy Reagan's funeral. President Obama reflected Monday on meeting the former First Lady during his early days in the White House.
Actually, I don't care what he says about her. If you're not going to go to the funeral, then don't pretend that you're all into her. So it's typical, in my opinion, it's his passive-aggressive leadership style that is meant to communicate to people, your values don't matter to me, you don't value matter to me. I have my ideas are true, yours are false. I'm going to work on my stuff, and you know, you guys can, the rest of you can go to hell. That's how I see it anyway. I see that he's continually trying to break people's spirit down and encouragement, enthusiasm. The joy or pleasure of being an American, he's trying to undercut that constantly by doing things that are unpredictable, which by this time they are very predictable, and by doing things that diminish the value that we hold in various things in America. I mean, it's all at some level contrived, but I think it's pretty sad because he's not, this one person is not going to be successful in breaking down the country, you know, because we're bigger than that. But it has been a huge blow to this country to have that kind of leadership. All right, here is Laura Ingraham on why Trump won.
Bottom of the hour here in the East. Let's get you caught up on what's happening. Donald Trump pulling off two big wins tonight in Michigan as well as Mississippi.
On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton winning in Mississippi, but it's a tough fight underway in Michigan for first place. And right now, Bernie Sanders is leading. Up next, Idaho. Polls close there in less than 30 minutes. 32 Republican delegates at stake out there. We are joined now by radio talk show host and Fox News contributor Laura Ingraham. Laura, your thoughts on this evening?
I think when you look at the Michigan race, that dynamic with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and the Trump win probably pegs this back to more than personality, which is obviously part of it, but back to the issue of trade. Remember when Mitt Romney lost Michigan, his home state, one of his home states, he lost it by 10 percentage points. And a lot of people peg that to his opposition to the auto bailout. And then we look at the WTO and NAFTA. There are about 231,000 aggregate jobs lost in manufacturing. Pegged to those two trade deals. That's through 2015. Michigan's really been hurting economically. And I think those two issues, both Sanders and Trump, kind of meet in this kind of non-ideological place on the political spectrum. I think that more than the, you know, advertising, the negative ads or the, you know, the Trump, you know, the long speech tonight, those types of performances. I think the issues actually really mattered in Michigan tonight. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point with the Trump on trade and Sanders on trade. You know, Hillary Clinton in that last debate on CNN tried to make a case that Bernie Sanders had voted against the auto bailout. And it was a little bit of moving the shells around. He voted against TARP, the funding. And then he voted for auto bailout loans. But it's not affecting him, that attack that she tried in Michigan. And it looks like he may even win.
And I think he's hit the issue of trade quite a lot. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is this massive 5,500-page deal that really needs to get discussed more in this whole conversation, that looms over this whole debate. Trump kind of had hit a glancing blow on that tonight. He also said he likes China and he loves China, but then he said they cheat on these deals. It's just a sense of fairness. I think most Americans think we do get benefits from trade, But it can't be the way it's been going, because obviously for the regular working person, it's been a tough road on wages and manufacturing job losses and so forth. But Michigan was terribly hard hit. It's going to be very interesting, Brett and Megan, how this plays out in Ohio with John Kasich, because he's walked a very interesting line on trade, is a little bit closer to the establishment side on that. But obviously the favorite son in Ohio, and he thinks he can, you know, he can take that state and really stop this Trump momentum.
I want to ask you about the Trump speech tonight, really the press conference. You know, he said Chris Christie's around here someplace at one point during that. And Christie's office is now clarifying that the governor is vacationing with his wife and daughter in Florida, but was not at Trump's speech tonight, just to make that clear.
Right.
Laura, your thoughts on what we heard there for the roughly an hour?
Yeah, I mean, he dominated another hour of news coverage. So, you know, I heard Krauthammer say it was a stem winder. It was a part reality show. It went all over the place. Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that. But every network stayed on his speech for an hour. And he talked about all his brands, Trump wine, Trump water. He beat back against the criticism that none of his businesses worked, which I think he just feels compelled to do that. Every time they come after him, Mitt Romney spent a lot of time talking about that. He's going to respond in kind. He joked about Paul O'Neill, the Yankees endorsement he got in Ohio, and O'Neill lives in Ohio. But also, beside all the, you know, the more goofy stuff, when he said, you know, I heard from Paul Ryan yesterday, I want to unify the party.
Although he did call all the candidates.
Yeah, that's true. But there was a moment where he said, look, we've got to win in Congress. I think a lot of people are looking for more of those moments from him where it's about America. Not so much about, you know, his businesses, which I understand he wants to defend all those, and I get that. But what's going to happen to America? How are we going to beat back, you know, the rise of globalism? How are we going to unify the country after a bruising primary campaign? It's nice to say that, but I think people want a little bit more. So he dominated the coverage, and I think a lot of people were, you know, enjoyed it or entertained by it. But I think when you go up against Hillary Clinton, I think you're going to have to hit with specifics. And a lot more than just the, you know, some of what we heard tonight.
I just have 10 seconds here, Laura. But if you look at the map, do you think he gets to 1237, the number of delegates needed to get the GOP nomination?
I think it's a lot more likely tonight. I think everybody is saying he peaked on February 11th or whatever that date was that was pegged a few weeks ago.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's a lot more likely tonight than he was, of course, last night.
Laura, thank you.
All right. So we're looking at a very much more likely. Well, you know, with each race, like I say, it's a marathon. You get a step closer, there's nobody in front of you, the chances of winning go up. That's common sense. We'll take a break here. 6:32. Here's a little bit of weather for you, or pardon me, yeah, your new newscast right here. And I do have some weather news for you when we come back. Some wild stuff going on out there around the country.
Walk along the river.
All right, so is Cruz just a better funded version of Rubio? Has Cruz taken over the place of Rubio? Rubio's done. There's no doubt about that. So who else is the establishment going to go with? If they feel like they cannot count on Donald Trump, which they obviously feel like they can't, because even if he was somewhat sympathetic to their ideas, then he would still be a person who didn't have anything in his pocket from any donors. So there's no control in that sense. All right, here is a clip from dangerous flash flooding along with severe thunderstorms from the Weather Channel. And this is going on right next door in Texas, Louisiana, these places.
Denton, Texas, this is one of the many water rescues we've seen in the Texas area over the past couple of days. This is all the result of days of rain that has left some places with single-day rain totals over 5 inches. Shreveport, Louisiana, they've been dealing with their flooding concerns as well. This isn't over. We still have a whole lot more rain to come, and the flooding effects are going to be far and wide, stretching from the south all the way into the Ohio Valley. So this is still a lot more of rain to come in this system. Now, this is what we can expect, additional rainfall totals right into the weekend. Now, some of this will let up in Louisiana and parts of Texas by the end of the work week. But where you see that red, we could have an additional inch of rain. Also, a widespread 5 to 8 from Houston all the way up.
So hundreds of square miles of Louisiana and Texas that are going to get more than a foot of rain before the weekend, which is, you know, fairly, I would say, fairly significant, especially if you're living there. Now, you know that they just had a inch and a half at the San Francisco International Airport. So what they're experiencing is called the Pineapple Express, where the storm comes in. And it's like a, they describe it as basically a river in the clouds, a river in the air. And then that storm comes in and then it stops and another one starts up. So they've got an extraordinary amount of water, rain, and snow up in the Sierras. Check this out.
Have a look at all that rain falling in Burbank, California. This was from Monday. There are spots that had some rain on Tuesday as well. And I'll tell you what, next couple of days, more rain on tap. This is good stuff. Don't forget, this whole drought situation we've got going on, I know the rain itself, it doesn't help it right away, but the fact that we get little by little, a little bit more rain here and there, and then you also get that snow in the high elevations with these systems as well, that does tend to help out the drought situation a lot more than the rain. But there's both of that stuff that's going to be coming over the next couple of days, rain and snow, and, you know, this is how much rain we've already had to date. I mean, almost 3 inches in San Francisco in just the first several days of March, that's pretty high number as far as that part of the country goes. So we catch a little bit of a break from the rain on Wednesday, but then, you know, late Wednesday into Thursday, we're right back at it again. And especially North California, Bay Area could see 5 to 8 inches, maybe even more in some spots.
Over a foot in some places in Northern California. So anyway, you have got a lot of very serious weather. Now, here is some more information on the latest from between Dallas and really from the panhandle of Florida. Emergency situation, high water rescues, and severe thunderstorms. And they are having some tornadoes, which is actually, I think that I just played this clip for you, so they've kind of recycled. But anyway, just to let you know. All right, it is 6:39, and Trump is claiming Rubio's getting out.
From the independents. But, you know, it's the biggest story in politics, what's happening with the Republicans. And I've done a great job, and I'm not being given credit. Instead, they take ads against me. And, you know, the funny thing, if they're successful, and if I don't win, all these people are going away, Joe, these millions and millions of people. They're not going to vote for Rubio. They're not going to vote for
you. If they take this from you at a convention, will you run as an independent?
I don't know, Joe. I don't even want to think about it now. I mean, to be honest, I'm the front runner by quite a bit. CNN had me at 49 the other day, 49 to 15. I think 15 and 15 for the two of these guys. I hear Rubio's getting out. There's big stories all over the place that Rubio's getting out. I don't know if he's getting out. He probably should. He hasn't won hardly anything. He probably should get out. And he's not popular. I mean, he's not popular in his own state. He's really defrauded his own people because he said he was going to be a senator. He doesn't go and vote.
Really quickly.
So,
all right, so you've got that, and here is a little bit something on whether Cruz, and this is especially for you Cruz lovers, you hear me, Donna, whether Cruz is going to be able to make it, and Chuck Todd saying he's just a better-funded version of Huckabee or Rick Santorum. Ooh, that's even worse than Rubio. Check this out.
To compare him and Hillary Clinton at this point, except for the fact that they're both front runners. But for her to lose Michigan tonight, for him to wrap it up as handily as he did, he's in a commanding position.
You know what's amazing about his win map is that it's so heavy in the South. That was supposed to be the Ted Cruz path to victory.
Yeah.
Right. It was supposed to be, and this was a map that was made for Cruz, and essentially, it was able to, he's run even with them, essentially, with evangelicals, give or take, depending on the state. And then he ends up winning all these white working class voters, that some of whom have come in that haven't voted in primaries in the past. But you laid it out very fairly. This is it. It's do or die next Tuesday. They either stop them in Florida, Ohio, or he's the nominee.
Is there any coherence to the places where Ted Cruz has won? Because he didn't pull off a traditional Southern strategy, yeah, which we thought he would. He has won in these scattershot
spots. He has won in places where it's usually, you can tell a Ted Cruz state in a few ways. Number one, it touches the state of Texas.
Right.
Okay,
sure.
That has helped. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's a closed process, closed primary, only open to registered Republicans. Donald Trump does better when you have independents and Democrats coming in. And then the third part of it is, if the little more rural it is, because usually a little more rural, a little more religious it is.
Mm-hmm.
Idaho fits that pattern a little bit. Even Iowa fits that pattern, but it's also, you know, while it's same-day voter registration, it is only open to Republicans only. So there, that is the pattern for Cruz, which is really the traditional Santorum Huckabee pattern. The problem for Cruz is he has not demonstrated an ability to go to – all he is a better funded version of Santorum and Huckabee. Mm-hmm. He has yet to prove
that's
that
devastating,
he
– that's totally true.
But he has yet to prove that he can do something greater than that.
That's devastating. It is terrible news for Cruz. So I don't know. But here – all right. So you want to get rid of – you want to get rid of Trump. It's to say you're in that gang of people that want to see him frozen out of the convention. Unbound delegates could hold key to stopping Trump at convention. And this is from Real Clear Politics. The ultimate result of the 2016 presidential election could yet rest on the likes of Erling Curley Hanglin, 69, a businessman from Bismarck, North Dakota, who will be one of the 2,472 delegates to the Republican Party convention, and he isn't saying what he'll do. I wouldn't know until the day of the first ballot at the convention in Cleveland, he said, because a lot can happen between then and now. And so there's the nightmare scenario for Trump, is that he wins or gets very close to winning, and then a lot of these people who are, don't forget these people that are delegates, are long-time party people. They're deeply into their party. Their party means more to them than anything, and they're getting rewarded after years of service, usually by becoming a delegate representing the whole party from our area. And, of course, it's going to be a super Republican. These are not going to be a bunch of, Rand Paul people or individuals that want to see the whole party turned over. They are party people. So that's the danger for him. Now, here is a little bit on how negative the campaign has been towards Trump. And this is from Ed Rollins, who was the campaign manager for Ronald Reagan.
His base is staying tough and hanging right in there, no matter what they say about him.
Have you ever seen a campaign the entire establishment goes after the front runner and the second place in most cases, the second place candidate hell bent on destroying them?
No, I haven't. Being honest, I've been around a long time. You know, the establishment wasn't for Reagan, but they couldn't stop him in 1980. But it was totally different. It wasn't anywhere near the negativity. It was. This is the most negative, vicious campaign I have ever seen. And it's our own side doing it to our front runner. That's the amazing thing.
Do you think, Monica, that there should be repercussions from this? That I mean, frankly, it's everybody from Speaker Ryan to Mitt Romney to the Koch brothers, for crying out loud, Larry Page, who, by the way.
So the nastiest campaign Ed Rollins has ever seen, and it is against our own party. You know, you think about this, the party refuses to put up a good candidate. It's almost like it's a conspiracy. The party refuses to put up a good candidate. And so when a candidate rises on his own or her own out of the frustrations of the situation, they try to kill the candidate. It's almost like the GOP is trying to fail. It's like the GOP is a shadow party to help support the Democrats, who are also in free fall. I'm going to come back and talk to you a little bit about Hillary's problems. The idea that she could be indicted. 646 Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in. And we'll take a little break here. I got your weather, local weather for you.
Don't fly, Mr. Bluebird. I'm just walking down the road. Early morning sunshine, they'll be all I need to know.
right. So there is a possibility, according to Judge Napolitano, that according to him, it's a done deal that Hillary is going to be indicted. She is going to be indicted before November. Now, he says it's certain. I don't know, you know, I don't really know where he's coming from on this other than the general information that we have about her. Judge Napolitano, indictment certain in Clinton email scandal before November. I don't understand why the party would have let this happen if they have control over it, and they do have control over it. Because just think about this, which we brought up before, is if Hillary is in some sense an extension of Obama's legacy, his time in office, and if Obama knows that if she doesn't get in, she's going to get someone who's very, very critical and opposed to his ideas, and they're going to start taking apart at least presidential orders that he mostly governed by, then why would he allow them, his own government, to do it? And he doesn't have to. But according to Fox News senior judicial analyst Andrew Napolitano, by the granting of self-incrimination, of immunity against self-incrimination to Brian Pagliano, who helped set up their private email server for Clinton, that they're doing this to set up Hillary for this, what would be essentially a coup against the party by the government of her own party. I mean, there's no way she could stay in office. Here is a little bit from Megyn Kelly on Wasserman Schultz, the one of the leaders of the party.
Hillary Clinton locked in a tight battle with Bernie Sanders in the state of Michigan. Right now, with 60% of the vote in, Bernie Sanders is leading by a small margin. Hillary Clinton already notching a win in Mississippi. Joining us now, chairperson of the Democratic National Committee, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Great to see you, Madam Chairwoman. So,
you too, Megan.
As I mentioned before the break, she was just killing him in the latest polls. 37% a couple days ago. 7 of the polls in Michigan were released in March. She led by 11 points, 13 points, 17, 24, 27, 28, 37. So what happened today?
Hey, well, I know you know this.
This
Megan.
Is Kelly. Can you hear me?
I'm the chair of the DNC, and so it's pretty much not my job.
This is Kelly. Can you hear me?
Analyzing why either one of our candidates.
This is Kelly. Can
well
you hear me?
Or not so well. I do think. It's
Let me put you on hold, okay?
We've had polls really this whole election cycle, kind of all over the place, on both sides of the aisle, and it sort of shows you that we're really, you know, a little too early in the election cycle to be really assuming that polls are extremely predictive, mm-hmm. and you know anything can happen.
One follow-up for you on that, because looking at the Michigan exit polls.
Well, we know that Hillary lost, so let's get back to let me cut to the chase on this in just a second. But we have a caller. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes. Good morning. It's Deborah. Happy Wednesday to everybody.
Thanks, Deborah. What's going on?
Yes. Thank you so much. God is answering prayer. You know, one of my pet peeves, I love the man forgave him, David Buchanan.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Lord, because of him being one of not of integrity, DUIs, a slumlord, you know, and then the sexual offense. You know, we all have to answer to what we do wrong. If we don't answer here on earth, we will answer when we take our last breath and we answer to our great creator.
All right. So are you consigning David Gutierrez to hell or what?
Well, it's his decision. I don't do that.
Oh, okay.
His decision. No. I'm just saying we all reap what we sow, every one of us.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, he interfered with somebody I know very personally that was going to come to court, but they were busy at the county with him. And so the media could not show up for that individual that I know very personally.
Okay. Listen, Deborah, it's the end of the first hour. I'm running out of time, but good luck to you and congratulations on your victory over David Gutierrez. All right, folks. I guess a symbolic victory since he's getting sued by the DA. We'll take a little break here and be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 654, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1550 KOBE. and we're going to take a break. I've got, by the way, I meant to mention this to you. I've got a subject for you that I want your input on in the next hour, and in addition to all the other stuff, but we'll get to it. On concubinage, you know what a concubine is? Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, Lydia, hi. I don't want to be on the air. I just wanted to see, could you address the Sea Island secret meeting?
I don't know about it, but can I put you on hold and you can just mention it briefly?
Okay.
All right. It'll be a wait of exactly 2 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. All right, we've got Lydia here. Lydia, you had a brief announcement?
Yeah.
Talk up, please.
I heard that there was a secret meeting in Sea Island, Georgia, in the news yesterday. They said billionaires, tech CEOs, and top members of the Republican establishment flew to a private island resort. This is from the Huffington Post. And their whole purpose is to stop Donald Trump.
I heard about that. I heard there may have been dancing trannies there as well, Caitlyn Jenner. But are they going to stop Donald?
I don't know, but Mitch McConnell was there. Paul Ryan, Apple CEO Tim Cook.
Yeah,
it's kind of creepy.
It is creepy. It is like what do they call it? The Illuminati. Mitch McConnell looks like a human. A reproduction of the Mr. Potato Head doll. But anyway, Lydia, thank you for the call. Anything else?
No, I just wanted to know what everyone thought about that.
I'm going to sniff into that over the break, so I'm going to have a report on the. Hey, but don't tune out. I'm going to talk about concubines too.
Thank you.
It's going to be fun-filled. It's going to be so exciting. Okay, thanks a lot, Lydia. Thanks for the call. All right, Sea Island, folks. And the human Mr. Potato Head doll, Mitch McConnell, is there, and he's ready to drop Trump like a hot rock, he said. I didn't know he was into music, of course. Anyway, Allman Brothers, take you out here. Blue Sky, Kelly O'Connell, 659, and AM Las Cruces, 1452, KOB 523. We got one last call. One last call. Okay, so there they went. We'll be right back. And it is the break of the hour, of course. Thank you. All right. So we know what happened yesterday, last night. Donald Trump won 3 out of 4 states, and Cruz won the other one. And Marco Rubio, I went through it, looked at all the counties. Marco Rubio won 2 counties out of 4 states. Michigan has, it looked like, hundreds of counties in it, so he's functionally dead. And they say Kasich has taken over. And I think I said Cruz, but it's actually Kasich has taken over the hearts and souls of the GOP party. He's become the latest zombie that they're trying to get to. Kasich, Rubio has like 130 delegates. Kasich has less than 50. I think it's like 30 or less. So anyway, now here is, okay. So I was going to mention something to you about concubinage. Now I've just got a little definition here for you. What is a concubine, Kelly? Why are you talking to us about this? It's interesting. I was looking one day, I don't know if I looked up the technical definition of concubine or I ran into an article. I think I ran into an article about, anyway, concubines. In polygamous society, is a woman who lives with a man but has a lower status than his wife or wives. In archaic, it means mistress. And so I began to read this article, and it said that technically, if you were going to use a biblical definition, which is, you know, where we get a lot of this stuff from, but beyond that, we have ancient society, this, you know, ancient Israel, ancient Rome, Greece, all these, you know, we're informed by all that. The classical world was Greece and Rome, and then you have Palestine and Israel and everything. So the society that comes out of there, and the society that is next door to them, which is the Akkadian Empire, which is Babylon and everything, which was kind of symbolized the, you know, Babylon symbolized the paganism of the age, but it was, I mean, paganism was everywhere around Israel, and the Israelis at various times also practiced it. But, all right, so here is the thing that caught my attention. Are you a modern day concubine? Because think about this, in the society that we're in now, and I'm not going to talk about this for an hour, just in case you find this to be not your cup of tea. We'll get back into some other stories, but I wanted to just throw this out to you and get your opinion on it. I've been thinking about it ever since I ran into this article. Marriage used to be highly rated, highly esteemed. And the purpose or the goal of the average person, the average normal person in society, was to get married and have kids. All right, those days are behind us. Now, more than 50% of children are not now being born out of wedlock. And I was thinking about this. These women that get involved in this, I'm not pointing fingers, I'm just saying, based on these old definitions, there's an article here from something called Shay the Doll, which I don't know anything about this website, but it just got a August 23rd, 2011, are you a modern day concubine? A concubine is, I'm just reading from this article, is generally a woman in an ongoing marriage-like relationship with a man whom she cannot marry for a specific reason. It could be because she's of a lower social rank, including slave status, or because the man is already married. Generally, only men of high economic and social status have concubines. Now, would this, and this person is asking, would this work in modern day society? And why would you want to do this? Could it backfire? All right, here's what it got me thinking about, is that technically a concubine is a woman that a man sleeps with whom he is not married to. As I began to think about that, I thought, you know, there's a lot of situations like that out there, and there's just a lot of people that are what do you call it hooking up, and I just was thinking about the status of these women, and I think we've been sold this in this modern age that we're in. We've been sold this way of life that the ancient world would have seen as just completely insane. And up until recently, would have been highly seen as highly immoral, and now it is just kind of, you know, it's just the way people live, how they choose to live their lives. But I'm really surprised at the number of people that are willing to put themselves into situations where that are so tenuous that, and there was just an article in a couple of articles that I saw, one of which was a woman had twins from two different men. So two children were conceived at approximately the same time, which means that she was sleeping with both these guys, had an open relationship. I know girls that are sleeping with more than one guy at a time. And I don't know how common that is, what percentage of girls would be. I mean, according to statistics, 2 or 3% of people who get married now are virgins. Now, it just so happens that while the divorce rate is somewhere around 50%, 45 to 50%, people who marry as virgins, the divorce rate is less than 5%, believe it or not. So there was another story, and this has to do with Lakma Padshi, who is a famous model from, I think she's Pakistani anyway, this beautiful woman who was married to Salman Rushdie, and then she had some affairs with these millionaires or billionaires, whatever, Michael Dell, who is the brother of the guy that started Dell Computers, is obviously probably a very wealthy guy. And she didn't know who the father of her child was because she was sleeping with these two different guys. So I don't know how common that is, but if you're female, you're not married, and you have a kid, and a lot of times somebody who has a child, if they get pregnant, it has a devastating impact on the relationship. The relationship ends because of the guy says, I really don't want to be, I'm not ready to be a father, and I'm not really into this girl that much. So, all right. So here is from the Daily Beast, the case for cohabitation, which is summed up in here for you. Today, with the exception of pockets of religious communities, we've mostly gone sex positive as a nation. Yet cohabitation seems to have replaced premarital sex as the axe to grind among everyone from social conservatives to psychologists. Given that 70 to 90% of young people will live together before they get married, it is the way people are going. All right. Now, believe it or not, in Islam, there is something called muta in the Shias, and then the Sunnis have their own form of, it's a temporary marriage. It's for 9 years to life. Pardon me. It's from an hour to life in length. And it was designed by the Prophet to take for men who are engaged in war, who are in battles and who are engaged in warfare away from home. They could, with the blessing of God, get together with women and have a brief marriage. And for the women, it was a way to make money, in theory. And this is the technical definition. For the men, it was, companionship, sexual satisfaction, whatever. So this is not a new idea, obviously, but I'm just finding it interesting that in the ancient world, typically the concubine wants to be the wife. She wants to be married. Now we don't value marriage. So there's just so many women out there that are willing. And this is, like I say, this is a societal issue. So I think that, I don't think it is profitable to blame men or women for stuff. If we as a society have come up with a way of doing things, then everybody is guilty, right? Everybody who takes part. So I'm kind of fascinated, though, the number of people that are willing to take risks for the pregnancy, disease, loss of reputation, which I guess doesn't really matter as much anymore. But also emotional entanglement and all this stuff. And I think in the ancient world, and I'm going to wrap this up, 5, 2, 3, 14, 15, nobody's calling in. So this may not, may not seem like a rich topic, but I've been thinking about it for a while. I'll mention one thing. The reason that people are criticizing cohabitation is the rate of divorce doesn't go down after you live with somebody, it goes up. And sociologists and stuff, psychologists think that it may be because you're saying to the person, I really don't trust you, I want a test drive. In the ancient world, the concubine was a woman without real status. And she wanted the status because she didn't want her kids to be bastards, you know. She wanted her children to be part of this patriarchal lineage from the father. And polygamy was obviously fraught with problems, as you can read the Old Testament and see the enormous problems that it caused up to Solomon. But I just find it fascinating that something that used to be looked down on and seeing as completely hold on a second, let me put you on hold. This is Kelly. I'll put you on hold and I'll be right back. But a position that had no status, was not looked up at, it was looked down upon, has now become the de facto way of people interacting. Thanks for the call. This is Kelly. Who's this?
This is Jeffrey.
Hey, Jeffrey, what's going on? And I hope you're well. Thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just listening to your what you were talking about. And something just kind of hit me when you were talking about people's character and the emotional tie. If you sit back and think about it, people really don't have character that they used to have. It's not as important to us because we have the mentality of what is right for me is not necessarily right to you, and what's right to you is not necessarily right for me. So with that mentality, you don't really have the character standards of old.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I'm sure that's true. What in particular do you think about this kind of issue that a lot of women are putting themselves? Obviously, the vast majority would never think of the term concubine, but they're putting themselves in the position of a concubine. I'm going to sleep with you for what we're going to date. I'm going to sleep with you for a while. I might be sleeping with somebody else. If it works, fine. If not, that's okay. I'm okay being a single mother. What do you think about that?
I think that, you know, as much as they would like to think that they're raising their standards and wanting to be better people, they're actually lowering their standards and becoming less of a person by doing that.
And you think let's just say you had a relative that said, I've met, you know, my boyfriend and I are going to move in together. What would you tell her?
I would tell him not to do it.
Why?
Well, because for one, I'm a believer, and I think it's wrong. And I think that what happens is that regardless, you know, I have lots of friends that are shacked up, as you would say. And sorry about that, that are shacked up. And there's always, oh, yeah, we've been together for 10 years. And I tried to tell them, I was like, yeah, but, you know, you don't have that covenant between one another, so there's no connection.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So you can always, you have that underlying feeling that I can walk away from this at any time.
At any time, yeah.
No,
and that's undoubtedly the attractiveness. I got another call, Jeffrey. Thanks for the call. Good points. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Yes, this is Tom.
Hey, Tom, what's up?
Yeah, are you familiar with the word Sancha?
What is it?
Sancha.
Sancha.
That's what they call Sancha.
Sounds like a Hispanic name.
Yeah, it's a Mexican term.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Well, you got a girl on the side.
Oh, yeah, it's what they call in hip-hop, I'm suddenly driving a blank. They've got this great term. It is my jump-off. A girl who's a jump-off. You've got your girl, but you have a jump-off. It's a girl that you just hook up with.
Yes, sir.
Friends
okay,
with
thank
okay, thanks a lot. All right, so anyway, I'm thinking about how much the world has changed in the last few decades, and then I'm asking to throw out there. I really don't have my own opinion. Look, as an attorney, I have to tell you, by all means, if you can possibly get married before you have a kid, please do. I helped a person who was in a situation, a very nice person who was had cohabitated with their spouse. Well, in their mind, it was their spouse. For whatever reason, they didn't get married, and then the other person passed on, and it was just an absolute disaster to try to deal with the implications. But that's from the legal situation. I think that most, all kids want to know who their parents are. That's just, you know, so if you have a kid outside of marriage, it seems to me like the chances are highly likely that they're not going to know their father, at least their father, as well as they could. Here's another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Sancho. Did somebody call for me?
Yes, Sancho. We're waiting for our order.
Okay, I just wanted to let you know I'm available.
Thank you. Thank you, Sancho. Isn't that the assistant to, what's the guy's name? Don Quixote. Anyway, we'll take a break here. Okay, we got another call. I'm just kind of curious what people are thinking these days. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. All right, we'll be back here. Okay, line two. All right, double down on your hang-ups there. We'll got hang-ups? Feel free to bring them on the show. We'll be right back. It's 7:25. All right. So I'm kind of like, just kind of, you know, think about this a lot. When this older generation grew up, their people either were either married or divorced. Women didn't really try to have kids out of wedlock. I mean, they wouldn't brag about it, you know. You've got this whole movement today of women who claim that they don't need men and they will use men if necessary, they're independent. Now, if you cancel all social welfare, how independent would they be? I don't know. You know, state becomes a father, but I just really wonder, like somebody, the first person that called up, Jeff, said that their quality of character has fallen. Now that brings up a whole different question in my mind, which would be, is there a connection between our sexual mores? A more is a way of acting or being your values in society. Is there a connection between that and the strength of a society? In other words, is the character, the sexual character or morality, is that tied into the strength of the nation? In other words, if the nation becomes kind of sexually dissipated, does that mean the whole nation is at risk? So we've got another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Bev.
Good morning, Bev. How's it going?
Good. I just wanted to comment that I agree with Jeffrey that because of the relative truth?
The relativity. Are we talking about Einstein or we're talking about relativism? Let me ask
relativism.
You this. Yeah, relativism. Have you ever known a concubine?
Well, no. Unless you're just talking about the modern day shacking.
Well, the modern. I know that we're not allowed to own other people anymore, but the modern day shacking up. It seems to me there are as many theories of relationship as there are people out there, and there used to be. You're either single, you're married, or divorced, or you might be. You know, you're involved in courtship or something, but now it seems like everything under the sun is available.
It's true, and it's because of ignorance. If they knew the consequences.
It could be because of penicillin, you know?
Well, the sexual revolution from the 60s changed us, right?
And the birth control, but yeah.
When you get sexual revolution, you get fatherless children.
Yeah.
You get women that are, I'm not even blaming it on men. A lot of people are unfaithful either way. They don't want to make a commitment.
The numbers.
Because it's very selfish.
Let me ask you this, Bev. The numbers for divorce are some hovering around 80% of divorces are contracted by women. The woman calls up the attorney and says, I need to get out of this puppy. I need to pull the plug.
I think you should interview all those divorced women and find out if they're really happier.
I don't think that divorce people.
Bev, since Bev doesn't always wear her miracle ear, I do divorce them every day in my practice.
I know, and it's horrible for the kids, isn't it?
Well, that's what I want to ask there is, like, okay, so we've become very libertarian in our sexual mores, which is, I mean, look, everybody's accepted it, right? So, but what's the impact on society? What's the impact on kids?
Well, we have abortion, and then we have a fatherless generation, and those children are victims. Fathers are the ones that are really good at protecting kids and providing for them, and so when you don't have that, look at the Las Cruces Sun News last week. There was like 3 or 4 stories of sexual abuse of children by old men.
Dirty old men. Say it.
If they had a father, that would not have happened.
Yeah, okay, so this brings up another interesting point. If you go to the statistics and look at them, if you look at them statistically instead of religiously, if you go to the statistics, you will find that abuse skyrockets as fathers leave homes. The chances of getting abused are so much higher by a mother's boyfriend or by a stepfather.
That's right.
Because there's seems to be a natural disinclination to commit incest, although there obviously is incest out there as well. But I mean, these cases of incest are even more sick. But anyway, I got to take a break here. Anything else briefly?
I just think that if the women demanded more, that they would get it. If you were...
Yeah.
Saying to the man, to a potential husband, I'm not sleeping with you until we get married, because without the marriage certificate, you do not have the legal rights. So they're selling themselves short.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call. Great call. Have a good day. All right. So here is one last thing I'm going to throw out to you. When I was growing up, there was this idea of beauty. And the idea of the beautiful woman, and it comes out of literature. If you look at the history of literature on romance, and it comes out of these courtly, you know, these courtly documents, but it really developed. If you look to the court of Charlemagne on forward, Charlemagne is the great king in England, and Henry the Great. There is a development of the idea of romantic love. It is not just people getting together to get, you know, to be together to have stock to produce children. It is this ethereal idea of romantic love, and it up until very recently was absolutely saturated literature, popular themes, pop music, and everything. And then there was this notion that the beautiful woman carried with her certain characteristics. And so, you know, and then in the medieval age, people, you know, guys fighting battles over women. And then you see in ancient Greece, Helen, the face that she's probably a 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl, the face that launched a thousand ships. You have until fairly recently the idea of a type of beauty, which also incorporated within it a belief that the beauty also demanded that there be character and chastity and all these things. And then these women would be basically worshipped by men. But the society gave birth to this idea of lifelong love, romantic love and life. That's all been lost. So what's the cost of that, you know? Anyway, here's a little bit of Duane Allman on Layla. Duane Allman is what makes this track smoke. Layla, Derek and the Dominoes, which is, of course, Eric Clapton and Duane Allman. We'll be right back. 733 MLS Cruises 1450 KOB 523 1450, and we'll be back. So are you a jump off? Are you a concubine? Call in 523-1450. Defend yourself. The jump off in urban uh, urban terminology is the second girl. It's, or you could think of it as a friend with benefits, FWB. Do you have friends with benefits? Do you seriously, if you're in a relationship and there is no set definition of the relationship, there's no legal standing, you're not married, you're not even engaged. Heck, I met somebody who was a very nice and smart girl who told me that there were two guys she was seeing and that she was not in a relationship with either one of them, but she was sleeping with both of them. And so we talked for a while. And I mean, I've really tried to train myself in life to not give people advice, because when you most feel like giving somebody a piece of your mind or advice is the time you probably most likely need to just listen and hold your tongue. And there have been studies, and there's actually something called, I believe it's called psychological interviewing. It's a way to get people to change their behavior. And you do it basically Socratically. You get people to know themselves. They get into a psychiatric or psychological relationship, or they enter. Anyway, the psychologist or the whoever it is, the person interviews them. And through interviewing the person, they bring up to the person themselves what they need to change or might want to work on changing or claim that they want to change. There is something in human nature that makes us very resistant. If people come up and tell us what we ought to do, our response is to tell them where they need to go or where they need to shove it, you know? So, and undoubtedly that's a survival mechanism of some kind. But anyway, I talked to this young lady, and we had talked several times about this. And then she finally asked me my opinion, what I thought she should do. And I said, absolutely stop sleeping with these people. And, you know, she said, well, why? I said, because I think your happiness quotient will go up. Now, this is kind of a far-flung discussion on in terms of the topics. But when I mentioned that the divorce rate for people who marry as virgins is something like 2 or 3%, another thing that was in this study was that the more partners a woman has, the more sexual partners, the less likely it is for her relationships to work out. In other words, the higher the rate of divorce. But why is that? That does not in any way comport, does not agree with how we see life today, how we live life today. You know, people grow up at some age in their teens, some point in their teens, they get sexually active, and maybe they go through college or whatever, you develop their careers, and they are sowing their wild oats, men and women, and then when they get done, they're going to get married. Now, to me, you're throwing away all those experiences. If you had all of those experiences with one person, which I know is probably sound very, very quaint and boring, you would have all this history with that individual to build off of. Instead, I think the psychological aspect is you're kind of leaving pieces of your heart with each person that you sleep with or having a relationship with. And I think especially with women, it's been my observation that they build up a wall. You know, they're more likely, because women are more sensitive, more emotionally oriented, would be more affected by this. This is just my theory that I've put together over the years, but it seems to be supported by the statistics. So anyway, but what's the impact on the kids? What's a kid's opinion? I read one time that kids are natural conservatives because they want to live with their parents and they don't want anything to change. And we have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hello, Kelly. It's me again.
Round two. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just think that you're right, and that it's not just your idea from your observation, but it's biblically based, sound relationships. The Ten Commandments are all about relationships with God and relationships with each other. But even if you have pagan nations, they understood that marriages make for strong cultures.
For example,
and every culture had marriage.
For example, in ancient Rome, And there's this statement out there, get your religion out of my marriage, which is so misguided. It's astounding. In ancient Rome,
in ancient Rome,
you've got this, there's a book that's called The Ancient City that I'll talk about. Well, let me talk about it when you're off the air, Bev. Was there anything else? Because I got to take a break.
Okay, I just want to say, please. The ladies are getting they're selling them short, but the men are getting what they pay for. If the men are in a relationship with some woman and they don't make a commitment to them because of selfishness, it does not attract any kind of good character to them. So they're just missing it on every level.
Okay,
so
thank you.
That's all. PayPals and sugar daddies. No,
sugar
daddy. A real woman doesn't want that.
Right. Lie down with dogs, get up with fleas. All right. So I was gonna dive into this thing here. So, all right, let me tell you about The Ancient City when we come back. One of the most extraordinary books to written. You can get it. It's out of copyright. You can get it online in a PDF format, print delivery format. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Los Cruz, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450, we will be back to talk about concubines. Uh, 7:45, and we got Jess Williams here for a brief summary of the county's events. Go ahead, Jess.
Thanks, Kelly. We had a very good meeting yesterday at the Board of County Commissioners, spirited discussion about how we're going to manage our fleet, more than 700 vehicles in that fleet. And, of course, the discussion centered on whether we should continue to use outside vendors or whether we should centralize all of our operations through the county fleet department. A lot of good points made on both sides. A lot of private vendors were there to present their point of views. And at the end of it all, it was a vote 3-2 to rescind the county manager's directive, centralizing everything through the fleet department and to allow departments, particularly sheriff's department, to continue to use those outside vendors. If you were unable to attend that meeting, or if you were unable to watch it stream live off our website, it'll be posted later today on our website so that you can take a look and see that discussion for yourself. Also, I want to point out that we had lots of employee recognitions yesterday, including 25 years of volunteer service to volunteer firefighter Laura May Schwartz and 30 years of volunteer service by Wayne Massey and Alfred DeVaris. Really want to thank those people for their service to our communities. The Board of Directors, the Animal Services Center of the Mesilla Valley, meeting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in City Council Chambers, and we'll get our annual report, which is a very comprehensive summary of everything that happened at the shelter during 2015. Lots of stats and statistics, and that'll be presented by Dr. Beth. If you're unable to attend that meeting in person, you can watch it live on Comcast Channel 20 beginning at 9 a.m. The Board of County Commissioners is going to have a work session next Tuesday at 9 a.m. to talk about utility rates throughout the county. That meeting will be streamed live, and the public is invited. And then our County Community and Constituent Services Office is beginning mobile constituent services hours at least twice a month. We're going to start out in the South Valley at Southern Park Elementary School from 6 to 7 next Thursday, March 16th, and they will have staff from Congressman Steve Pierce's office on hand. We're going to continue to do this outreach with the congressional delegation throughout the county, so look forward to coming to a community center or a school near you. And our pet of the week is Vanna. She's a black and tan Rottweiler Shepherd mix, really well-behaved dog.
Vicious. She's vicious as all get out.
She's just gorgeous. They brought her in yesterday, and she's unbelievable. She'll be set up at the farmer's market downtown on Saturday. She'll be there from 8:30 to 1, or you can check out Pets Up at Petco from 10 to 3 on Saturday. And our friends at the Coalition for Pets and People are screening the No-Kill Advocacy Center film Redemption at the Fountain Theater on Saturday, March 12th at 4 o'clock. Doors open at 3:30 p.m. Tickets, only $10. If you'd like more information about any of the stuff we talked about, the place to get it's our award-winning website.
Thanks, Jess. Really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You bet.
Are you in favor of concubines?
I have no opinion.
No official opinion. All right. Okay, so folks, we'll catch up with you, Jess. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Okay, so on the issue, concubines, blah, blah, blah. I actually first got a clip for you here, and not directly related to concubines, but a very strange story. A woman dancing naked on the top of a big rig on Highway 290, Huffmeister Road in Houston.
Bizarre sight on Highway 290 this morning. A naked woman dancing on a big rig backs up traffic for miles.
Yeah, she was up there for about 2 hours as police and firefighters tried to coax her down. Channel 2's Jake Reiner was there as they finally managed to get the woman off the truck. Jake is joining us live now. Jake, I understand you spoke with some of the people who watched all this unfold.
Yeah, Bill, we were all kind of watching it all unfold for a couple hours. People were lining the streets to get a look at what was going on. And to be honest, you have to see it to believe it. A traffic jam for the ages.
I've never seen anything like this.
This morning, a completely naked woman climbed on top of an 18-wheeler. She backed up traffic for miles for about 2 hours.
She's under the influence of either A, she has a mental health schism of some type, induced by drugs.
Harris County Sheriff deputies say the woman was a part of two minor hit-and-run crashes before she wound up creating this bizarre scene along 290 in Huffmeister.
Anyway, so she looks to be about 200 pounds before you get too excited. Anyway, all right, so going back to this issue, I think the ancient people would be shocked. Obviously, any ancient person would be shocked by the modern world because of all of the advances, the cell phones, cable, electricity, cars, jets, I mean, you name it, you know, clothes, everything that we enjoy, fast food, they'd be especially shocked at McDonald's, I think. But I think that they would be taken aback by the attitude of modern people towards social stuff, because there's no valuation of marriage. I mean, the people who are married and enjoy it value it, of course, and there's a lot of those people out there, but society as a whole doesn't seem to really build up the idea anymore. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of a sense that there, you can do anything you want, and we're going to keep getting carried on. And so, you know, somebody like, a Christian person, maybe somebody like Bev, who would be quick to quote the Bible, which I don't have a problem with that on this type of stuff. I don't know if that persuades people anymore, but I think, you know, people that believe in the Bible, people that are Christians, obviously they're going to pause and listen to it a little bit. But I mean, I kind of wonder in general. I mean, I think if you can't make an argument outside of the Bible, for your ideas and beliefs, you're limiting your ability to persuade people. You know, you've got to be able to kind of round up, make a kind of arguments that are, you know, across the board, not just for religious people, not just preaching to the choir, in other words. But I wonder what kind of a society we are creating, because we're the ones who brought, I mean, if there's kids now, and I had trashed millennials the other day because they're like, the thankless you owe me generation. But whose fault is that? I mean, it's the people that raise these individuals. It's the people that, I mean, the millennials, to the extent that they're rude or demanding, ungrateful, they've got to live with that. And they, you know, it's their duty, I guess, to change if that's the thing to do. But they didn't create the world, you know? And so this world that we're in now, that we're raising these kids up in, it just seems to me that when a person is 18 or whatever, ready to go on their own, they're in a, you know, good to go and everything. But up until that point, there's an extraordinary responsibility to try to give the most stable and loving environment that you can kids, just so that they'll turn out, they'll grow up with a chance to make it. And, It would appear to me that we're not doing that anymore. When we do have a phone call, and I feel sorry for kids. They get shuttled between houses. You know, today I'm with my dad, and, you know, and tomorrow I'll be with my mom, and, you know, over the weekend she'll drop me off at grandma's house. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes. Good morning. It's Thomas.
Good morning, Thomas. Hope you're well. Thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
I was curious, your previous caller was alluding to a biblical sort of position. How did the biblicists defend the fact that throughout the Old Testament, the issue of concubines was completely, it seems to me, unbridled?
Well, that's a beautiful question. Let me just answer that, since you've asked. The societies in the Old Testament world were polygamous, and so I believe that the Israelis picked up the idea. It says in the Old Testament, though, to the kings, you know, the Israel demanded a king. God gave them a king, and then the kings, it is stated, do not multiply wives, and you see the enormous problems that caused for David and Solomon. It caused so many problems, and for these other biblical patriarchs, I would say that if you read the Bible from that angle, it is not blessed by God, but it's accepted because I guess it's a sinful world or whatever. I don't know. What's your opinion?
Well, I think you alluded to it. It's a cultural moray.
Yeah.
As may be true today, the cultural mores change, but people want to reinforce it with some sort of authoritative, in this case, a biblical notation or a scripture of some kind. I think we'd be better served to address the whole issue of human sexuality with the word responsibility. Why don't we teach children to be responsible?
What does that mean?
There are many complications from,
what does that mean?
All kinds of illicit sort of relationships.
What does that mean?
Irresponsible.
What does that mean when you say be responsible? That's just kind of a general term. How would you? What do you mean?
Yes.
Please apply.
Yeah, the specificity there would be, let's teach our children what intimate sexual relations could produce: another child, sexual disease of some kind, the emotional, the psychological, the social issues that result from sexual intimacy. Let's actually give them some information so that they can make wise decisions, hence become more responsible.
So, but I mean, it seems like if you approach it from that way, and maybe this happens inevitably, but you're saying you can do what you want, but here's what happens if you're sexual.
Well, yes. What I'm saying is they're going to do what they want. I mean, human sexuality is the second most powerful.
Well, let me ask you this.
They're going to do what they want.
Let me ask you this, Thomas.
So why not give them information so that they can be more responsible?
Hold on, because we're running out of time here. Just hold on a second. We used to live in a world where there were much tighter norms, and people generally followed those. Now we're kind of in a everybody can do what they want period of time. Can't you, at least in your own household, say, as long as you live with me, these are the rules? You can't. I'm not just going to teach you where babies come from, and you can do what you want, and the family will learn to live with it. It seems like we've lost the authority. Maybe it's maybe losing the father in the home is one part of it, but we've lost the belief that we can tell our kids what to do, at least when they're at home.
I think educating your children, everything is age appropriate. I think there is a time when you can say to children, you will do this, you will not do that. But to suppose that you're going to be able to control a teenager and say, you will do this, you will not do that, that's not working.
It's not working, but I don't see, it doesn't seem to me like anybody's trying anymore. We've given up on this idea that your house is a moral zone in which the people that work for the house and fund the house and, you know, the parents have a right to say what goes on there. I'm running out of time. Anything else?
No, but thank you for the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. So, I mean, it's extraordinarily difficult to fight against the stream of society, right? Because it seems like you're wrong. You're a fanatic. You're an oddball. But I had mentioned this girl earlier. I told her, she asked me what I thought. I said, you know, don't sleep with these guys. And she said, well, why not? And I said, because I don't really see that it's gaining you anything. There's a lot of negative things that happen through kind of casual intimacy. The only thing that I think that is a positive is that you can have some pleasure. But I mean, to do things only for pleasure means that you're whatever you want to call it, a hedonist or whatever. I think that the society we're dooming ourselves through the generations that we're bringing up. That's what it seems to me anyway. Like I don't know what the future holds, but it seems like we're paying any attention to the future. Anyway, thanks for spending some time with me. Wanted to get into the whole concubine thing and forget politics for a while. And the dancing naked 200-pound woman, too. I wanted to share that with you. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, Kelly O'Connell. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And we'll meet you back in 22 hours. And I'm going to have Steve Pierce on for tomorrow. Ciao. And by the way, this song was written to express the guy that wrote it. What's his face? Eric Clapton wrote it because he was in love with George Harrison's wife. See you tomorrow.